Tango Tango Papa 1936, December 8, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from Marietta, Georgia. So they came out and spent the night here last night at the company terminal to get my truck worked on. So they came out, I guess it was about 8:15 this morning, knocked on the truck and told me which bay to pull the truck into once I got dressed and everything. And so I did, and so the truck was in the shop for the better part of the day. I think it finally got out probably maybe by 6 p.m., 5:30 to 6 p.m. Eastern time is when they finally told me that it was ready, although they did say that the guy also found a an EGR valve leak. He said that the leak was minor and that it would have to go to a different shop, and so I guess they have the outside guy come in and work, I think is how it works. And so that it would have to go in line, and it might mean another day of setting, waiting on it. But it wasn't really critical, and it could probably be put off. So since I'm going to be taking my vacation starting on the 19th, I really don't want to spend too much time, since that's only, at this point, it's about, by tomorrow it'll be 10 days away. I don't want to spend all this time just kind of sitting here doing nothing, because it's only, the vacation's only 10 days away at this point. So I told them, well, I'll just go ahead and go on since it's not a critical problem at the moment. They did get the fuel-fired heater working again. The guy said that Fit worked on that, said that the thing hadn't been assembled properly and there were missing parts. And so the last guy that worked on it, I got the impression that this was the first one that he had ever worked on. So that might explain why, since it was the first one he ever worked on, that might explain why it wasn't reassembled properly and there might have been missing parts or whatever. So we'll see what happens. So far, I'm parked here, and so far so good. It seems to be working. It did get rather chilly last night here at Marietta. It got down to about 38 degrees Fahrenheit, and so that was a little bit chilly. I almost, instead of using this heavy duty sleeping bag, as I used it as the blanket, and I've got a lighter sleeping bag that I laid out on top of my sheet, and then the heavy duty sleeping bag is the one that I covered up with. And I almost, at one point or other, I almost wished that I would have, I thought about, well, I just get up and not zip the heavy-duty sleeping bag up, but kind of fold it over and get into it that way. But that might have been too hot, even without zipping it up. So I was able to sleep with it, pretty much with it, just as a blanket, and I was pretty much comfortable. So we'll just kind of see what happens, and hopefully it will continue working. Although I don't really trust these things anymore. So from now on, I'm going to go ahead and carry this heavy-duty sleeping bag just in case, because you just never know when I might need it. And so it's better to have it and not need it than get into a situation where I really need it and don't have it. So, see what happens. But in the meantime, they actually did. I need to pause this, I guess, and I looked at my Qualcomm earlier, and they hadn't sent any loads, but at this point, the little light indicating that there's a message waiting is lit up, and so it's probably a load offer of some sort. So I'm going to pause this and take a look at it and see what the message says. Okay, I'm back. They did send a load, so it picks up tomorrow afternoon at no earlier than 1 p.m. it looks like, at Morrow, Georgia, which I'm going to have to look, but I believe Morrow is somewhere around the Atlanta area, I'm pretty sure, but I'll look just to be sure. And then that load delivers to Lakeland, Florida. So that should be able to do that without too much trouble. So I'll just go. I'm spending the night here at the company terminal in Marietta. And then I did find an empty trailer. So depending, I really couldn't see how clean or dirty it was when I looked in the back of it to make sure it was empty because it's dark. So I will perhaps get it washed out on the way to Morrow, Georgia. Maybe I'll get it washed out. If I decide that it's not clean enough, then I'll go ahead and get it washed out. So they've sent a load, and so that should be underway. Probably leave here sometime. Depending if the thing needs washed out, maybe by mid-morning, so I'll allow enough time to get the trailer washed out if I need to, and then get to where the place where the load's going to be picking up at. So anyway, lately I've been kind of thinking about, you know, I've talked about and kind of taken action with getting my house kind of in order, that type of thing. And although I haven't really thought about retiring, I have kind of been thinking, you know, about, you know, there's the Social Security. There's the issue of Social Security, and of course you can start receiving it. The earliest you can start receiving it is once you turn 62, you can receive it, although you end up with a reduced benefit amount, as opposed to waiting. You know, if you wait, let's say until you're 66 years old, then before you start taking the Social Security, then the actual monthly benefit is going to be higher. But here's the little rub. I was reading something yesterday, and here's the little rub with that. If you go ahead and start taking the Social Security benefit at age 62, even though it's a reduced amount, the only way you would actually, you're kind of taking a gamble, because if you live past the age of 83, then you would have, the way I read that thing, you would have gotten more. You know, if let's say you're going to live to age 90 and you sort of know it ahead of time, well, I'm going to live to age 90. And so therefore, if I wait until I'm 66 to start receiving benefits, the Social Security benefits, monthly benefits, then I'm going to come out ahead because I'm going to live to age 90, versus if I start receiving the reduced amount at age 62, then if I go ahead and live to age 90, I won't have received as much total the way I read that thing, as I would have if I would have waited until I was 66 before I started drawing the benefit. So, so I don't know. It's a gamble. You know, how do you, you don't know if you're going to live. I have no idea if I'm going to live to 83. That's a shot in the dark. I don't have a clue. That is a real shot in the dark. And so I'm kind of really more inclined to go ahead and sign up for Social Security once I can, whenever, as soon as I possibly can at age 62, which is at this point, let's see, in 4 months I'll be, let's say 4.5 months, basically, or a little over 4.5 months, I'll be, because my birthday is in early April, I'll be 61. So 12 plus 4 is 16. So in 16 and a half months, basically, I can apply for Social Security and actually start receiving a check, if I read the thing right, starting in May of next year. Now, but you can continue working. Now, they will reduce the benefit amount as long as you continue working. But on the other hand, I could continue working as long as I really want to. And then at any time, of course, let's say I continued to work until I was 65. Well, at that point, I could just... or 64 or whatever else, I'd have to figure the insurance part out. But, you know, as far as health insurance goes, excuse me, but in the meantime, it might be possible for, if the biggest drawback with the job that I have right now is if, regulations just become too onerous, they become too much of a problem, too much of a hassle, it would be possible to just say, well, you know, I'm in a good position, don't really need the hassle of this, maybe I could take a, you know, some lesser paying job, you know, whatever it might be, that as long as it had some sort of a health benefit attached to it, then I could, you know, because you have to be 65 before you can sign up for Medicare. So, I don't know. I'm really kind of thinking about that. So, in the meantime, I have no real intention at this point of quitting. That's not really the point of, if I did go ahead and sign up for Social Security benefits, it's not really the point of doing it so that I could just immediately quit, because I don't really, at this point, want to immediately quit. But on the other hand, it would be kind of nice to have options. So it's just kind of something to think about. Really, what's the best way of doing it? What's the best way? What would be the best way of handling it? But so I don't know. It's really just kind of something I've been thinking about, and you know, since it's been something that I was thinking about, I just kind of wanted to talk about it a little bit. So, anyway, the real reason that I'm recording a podcast 2 days in a row, besides the fact that I have all this extra time today, is that Joel sent me some more voice comments. And kind of responding to what I was, one of the things I talked about in the last podcast regarding getting a feeling out of giving, because I listened to the first part of Joel's comment. I didn't listen to all of it, but so let me go ahead and start playing Joel's comment, and I may end up pausing it and responding. Just kind of depends. So anyway, here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Finishing up listening to your last show, You said about giving and not getting a feeling out of giving. And to me, getting the feeling actually is not a horrible thing. It's not a bad idea to get a feeling out of it. But it's, to me, it's trumpeting it, you know, saying, look at the good I did. Look at the good I did, you know.
Now, the problem, as I see it, with getting a feeling out of really anything, but of giving, since that's what we're talking about, if you go to, you know, I'm going to just kind of go to a completely different story, and, you know, and I know you've heard this before, and anybody that's been listening has heard me say this 1,000 times, but it's a good story, so I'll tell it once again. Let's say that you've got a new pair of shoes or a new shirt or a new car or whatever it is, and someone gives you a compliment. Oh, what a beautiful new car you have. Or what, you know, I love your shoes, or I love that new shirt you're wearing, or the new dress you're wearing, or the purse you have, or whatever it is. Doesn't matter. And then your ego, the wrong side of your ego, just kind of gets this sort of a puffed up feeling where it sort of just makes your day. You feel so good about because someone gave you the compliment. Well, the problem is that the wrong side of your ego, the part that puffs up, as if it's some sort of, you know, it's puffing up like it's God, or, you know, kind of puffing up like a cobra, snake. The part of that wrong side of the ego that sort of puffs up from a compliment, in this case, that's getting a feeling out of the compliment. The problem with that is it becomes instantly addicted to that feeling, to getting that feeling, and then the person, in this case, the person that gives you the feeling, or if it's a new car that gives you the feeling, or a combination of both, you have the new car and you love the new car smell and you think people are looking at you for, you know, as you're driving the new car, that type of thing. And believe me, I'm sure anybody that's had a new car, we've all done it, been there, done that. You know, and then the first little scratch you get on it, it's like you were scratched. You know, it's like your life was destroyed. But the problem with that, with the feeling, is that the person giving you the feeling, giving you the compliments, and after all, it's just a series of words. And you're just kind of responding in a Pavlovian style to a series of words of praise, as... The problem with that is then the wrong side of your ego is instantly addicted to it. And then that person or someone that looks alike, smells like that, smells alike, that person that gave you the compliment, you need more of them. You need more compliments. And so then, you know, and then if they withhold the compliments, if they realize, maybe they realize that they're holding sway over you, and all they have to do is just threaten to withdraw the compliments, and it feels like someone's jerked the rug out from underneath you, and you feel horrible. And they can use that as a psychological weapon to kind of keep you doing, you know, kind of dancing, you know, like a little marionette doll. They pull the strings. And so those feelings are really strings for someone else to manipulate. Now, you can do that to yourself. You can get a feeling without even someone giving you a compliment. Let's say you get the new car and you just kind of, every time you look at the new car, you just sort of beam, and you, in your imagination as you're driving it, it's like these people are just admiring you, and it's like the, you know, a similar thing would be like you're standing on the street and at any minute you expect that the Cadillac is going to come around the corner and pick you up, you know, and that type of thing, you know, where, someone's going to recognize me. But if, in lieu of that, the problem is that you can recognize yourself. You can generate your own feelings. People do it with food all the time. People, you know, let's say that you have someone that, you know, that has a mother, and mother's a good cook, and then mother feeds them and has cooked for them. Well, oftentimes, if mother's no longer around, let's say mother's died, then you find people that recreate their own mother. You know, they're doing it themselves, and you can sort of, you know, you can sort of see them sort of recreating their own mother, and they're sort of getting a feeling out of food in this case. So it's a kind of a dangerous thing. You got to be very careful. You got to be extraordinarily careful about, you know, getting feelings, getting emotional, kind of an emotional charge or a little zing out of, and it's more really not so much the giant emotional charge, but just the little zing that you get from, getting a feeling out of something like this. So you don't even have to have other people don't even have to be involved. And so that's really what I see as the danger of getting a that little zing. And it's, and at the root, it's not even necessarily, you can almost think of it more as a little electrical charge than some sort of a giant emotion, you know, a big emotional feeling. But it's, that to me is quite something tells me that that I just don't want to do that. I want to avoid doing that. And if something tells me it's not good for me to, if I give somebody something and or if someone gives me a compliment, I'm very careful, and I'm really observing myself, making in, you know, and I'm not going to tell, you know, nobody knows what's going on in my mind, basically. It's just I'm observing myself, making sure that I'm not doing it in order to try to feel good myself. Because if I do it, let's say that I give somebody something, and but in my own mind, kind of the hidden part of my own mind, I'm getting that little zing out of it, then the wrong side of my ego is going to become addicted. It's like crack cocaine for the ego. It becomes addicted to that little zing. Now, you know, I'm calling it a little zing, but it's probably, you know, and if you look at what's going on in the brain, and if you could really measure it, there's probably sort of little endorphin rewards that are kind of going on. And those things, those endorphins and the chemical processes that happen in our brain are natural, but the trouble comes in when we pervert them. We, for example, you know, animals have natural emotions, and so people think, oh, well, I can, you know, animals are emotional, so people, I'm going to be emotional too. The problem is we as human beings abuse our emotions. And we abuse our emotions to the point that we end up with all kinds of sicknesses. We literally make ourselves sick with all kinds of different diseases. If you look at animals, animals really, you know, pick the animal species. They have a very limited number of diseases they can get. But you look at human beings and there's zillions of them. All kinds of different diseases and syndromes and God knows what. And the vast, I'm convinced the vast, vast majority of them are based on emotions, on abuse, overuse, abuse of our emotions. And it causes us all kinds of grief. So I like to just remain as calm as possible and when it comes to, and, you know, when it comes to this, the little zing, and it's kind of like resentment, I can kind of describe all around it, but I can't really tell you. You've got to figure out what it is yourself. This is along those same lines. It's you can almost say that you could apply to it the word pride. You're taking pride in in whatever it is, you're getting a feeling out of doing something. And it doesn't matter whether you're getting out of a feeling out of doing something right or doing something wrong. It really doesn't matter. If I do that in the wrong way, let's say I get a cream puff and I eat the cream puff and I sort of lose myself in the experience of the cream puff, then that's dangerous. That's not a good thing to do. Because then you become addicted to cream puffs. So it's these things that I'm talking about, and of course I have to communicate with words. That's all I have to communicate with. And I can kind of talk around different concepts, but in the end, it's up to you, it's up to me to sort of decipher these things. And, so it's just something you can't actively try to reprogram yourself, but it's something to be aware of. So when I am in a situation where someone gives me something, or I give somebody something, I decide that just spontaneously I'm going to give somebody something, I'm very aware at the time that I do that, not to get any kind of feeling out of it, not to get any kind of little emotional charge, that little zing out of it. Very careful not to do that, because I know what the consequences of that are. Experienced that, because the consequences of that are have been for me in the past. That the direct consequences of that are suggestibility, and then you have to do all kinds of things to compensate, and I have to lie to myself, that I'm really not that suggestible. I really wanted to do whatever it was that I'd become addicted to get the good feeling out of, et cetera, et cetera. I used to be a people pleaser, when it came to computers and helping people with computers. I was a giant people pleaser, and I finally realized realized what I did, and then then the compulsion sort of went away. And so I over the years I've just stopped, and now I'm under no compulsion to help anybody, go out of my way to help anybody with their computer. That doesn't mean to say that I'm not going to help somebody if they have a computer problem, but on the other hand, I'm not going out of my way to do it, because I would go out of my way to help someone with a computer problem and then, kind of work my fingers to the bone trying to solve whatever their problem was. And then in the back of my mind, I was secretly resenting them, so that type of thing. So it's getting these little feelings out of things, that little zing to the wrong side of the ego is dangerous. And so it's just something to really be aware of. Something to be very cognizant of, and as it goes by, don't try it. You can't really roll your sleeves up and fix yourself. But what we can do is we can go ahead and be aware, even if that awareness sometimes the awareness can be a little bit painful. But on the other side of that, if you're really aware of it, then the compulsion eventually, you'll find the compulsion is gone, and it kind of mysteriously disappears. So anyway, all I have to communicate is with words, and words mean different things to different people. And so all I'm really saying again, is simply be aware of kind of what's going on, the forces that are going on in my own mind. And the more I'm aware, what I find is that the more aware that I am of what's going on in my own mind, the more and it's kind of hard to say, but the more, and it's going to sound cheesy, but the more sort of stable my own mind becomes. And it's, you know, there can be all kinds of chaos going on around me, and I'm kind of really unaffected by it. And another part of that, you know, you're talking about, well, you don't want to trumpet what you've done. You know, look at me, look at what I've given, or whatever. That is kind of, if you flip that around to, we're going to turn this around and we're going to talk about resentment. But, you know, because you can resent and be very vocal and public about it. Or, like as not, you can just kind of keep it under wraps. And it's sort of going, you know, on the outside you may be jovial and seem happy or whatever. But on the inside, sort of boiling and seething. And so the same thing can apply with feelings. You may, in your own mind, you could be thinking, I'm really a good person. You're not really, I guess you're saying it to yourself. Look at what I've done. I'm a good person because I'm getting the good feeling out of it. And yet on the outside, you're sort of not even mentioning it or sort of downplaying it. And so that possibility exists too, and because it really is, it's sort of the, you know, kind of the other side of, because on one side you have resentment, and then the other side you have, you know, you're kind of being proud of the resentment. So those two things are sort of going hand in hand. They can both be overt. You can be very public about them. And kind of sort of become a bully in a sense with it, and lord it over other people, or you can kind of keep it under wraps and sort of behind your glasses, as it were, and you know, nobody really knows what's going on in your mind, but those things are kind of going on in the background, and if you really are honest, you can see them. And so these things are just things to be aware of. I'm not, I don't want anyone to take it as I think that you should change your behavior, because your behavior, people make the mistake of thinking, well, I'm going to change my behavior, and then if I can just change the behavior, then I'm going to change. And there's a problem with that, because you're not really getting at the root of the problem if you just compensate with a behavior change. So again, these are just things to be aware of. I'm not suggesting that you should try to change your behavior. These are just things to think about. And this is just sort of fruit for thought, and it makes for very interesting discussions.
Well, I know you've probably seen the show, but in fact, actually, the whole show is on Netflix right now, and that the show I'm talking about is MASH. And there was an episode, I think, in eighth or ninth season. I can't remember which one now. It's all a blur right now because I've been binge-watching it in the evening just because I wanted something just kind of to unplug and just something to watch. And there was an episode at Christmas time where Charles Emerson Winchester, who was the rich guy from Boston, got three packages of candy and took it to like an orphanage in Korea. And then of course he ended up finding out that they ended up selling it on the black market so that they can get money for food. And kind of felt bad about initially how he acted, but in that manner, I don't know if he gave for the right reasons or not. You know, it's a TV show. I don't really try and think too much about it, but as part of his whole plan was he wanted to do it anonymously, you know, and that's kind of how I am. I don't really need someone to point it out. I just, you know, and getting a good feeling out of it's not bad. It's just, what do you do with that feeling? Are you sitting there trumpeting it out, say, hey, look how good I am? You know, well, honestly, I'm no better than anybody else. You know, for every homeless person I've handed money or food, I've probably walked by just as many, if not more. You know, also kind of goes down to, if you see someone who needs help, you want to help them. To me, I just help them, and by me handing them cash, I hand them in cash. You know, I don't care. It doesn't bug me at all with that. If they spend that, like if I give them $5 and they end up spending it on booze, well, that's on them. That's not on me. I did my part, is the way I look at it. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to trumpet it. It's just what I do, you know, and I typically, you know, you won't necessarily see me talk about that on Facebook. Although every once in a while I will. And the main reason is I think that it's something that people really don't think about all that often, is that little tiny thing, like where you, just think about this, like next time you go through a drive-thru. I haven't had it happen to me, although I have had friends who have had it happen, where the guy in front of them paid for them just for the heck of it, you know. And you don't know what you could be helping, you know. And you don't even have to trumpet anything like that. You know, you can do something about that. And to me, it's also fine about getting a good feeling about that. You should get a good feeling out of it, but what you do with the feeling is the biggest thing. At least that's the way I look at it. I'm, you know, not disagreeing with you 100% there, you know, but I think it's okay to have a feeling about it, you know? And you shouldn't need to, have, certain things, you know, or it'd be a certain time of the year or anything of that nature. So,
well, again, you know, this is just something to be aware of, you know, because feelings, the overall point that I'm trying to make, I don't know what, you know, if I'm doing a very effective job with it or not, but the way I look at these kind of, you know, feelings, and I'm talking about the things that we can't see, that sort of go on between our ears, that, you know, that you can't really, you can maybe look at someone's facial expression and see what, you know, and you can kind of emulate what's going on in their mind, but it's just something to be very much aware of. And the way I look at it, when I'm in a situation where I'm, and really, if you think about it, it's not just in the matter of giving and receiving, but when we're interacting with people on a daily basis, even though there may not be any money or necessarily physical objects being given or received, when we're, you know, and it's even called the normal give and take that we are engaged in with people every day as we go about our lives, our existence, this is something to be aware of. The way I look at it, I'm very careful in how I am interacting with people. Because that beyond what we're talking about here, just in the very act of interacting with people on a daily basis, it's just, these are things to just be aware of. Because it's entirely possible to end up being manipulated without even realizing it. In a sense, you know, they keep talking about this encryption, and you know, the governments want to pass the laws so that they have a backdoor, quote unquote, into the encrypted device. Or they want a backdoor into the encrypted communication. Well, what this really is, if we want to put it in that language, there's this backdoor that's really, in most cases, it's just wide. It's not even cracked a little bit. It's wide open, where people are sort of end up reaching in and manipulating us. And we reach in and manipulate those other people, and we're not even really aware of it, that we're doing it, as we interact with people. So these are things just to be, you know, again, to be aware of. It's not something you can say, well, I'm not going to do that anymore, and you can't roll your sleeves up and fix yourself. You didn't create yourself. You can't fix yourself. Maybe you can make yourself worse. You can kind of break yourself. You can make yourself worse, certainly, but you can't fix yourself. It's not possible. And you know, compensating with different behavior, that's not enough. I mean, it's just not enough. So it's again, it's more about being aware of what goes on in my own mind, how I'm interacting with people, and I'm making sure that I'm not allowing what people say about me, or you know, again, you know, if somebody gives me a compliment or on something or other, I say thank you, but I've really learned not to get any kind of a buzz out of it. And so I've, you know, basically I'm on the lookout for any sort of mental, you know, sort of buzz. And that's you know, whether it's the buzz of resentment or the buzz of pride. And so those are the things, that's the thing that I'm looking to really be aware of and as I deal with people kind of on an ongoing basis. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's relatives, or friends, or just perfect strangers that I meet. I had a number today while I was waiting. There's a bunch of drivers here waiting around for their trucks to be fixed. And I had a number of more or less casual conversations. And same thing applies. I'm always... for whatever reason, I'm always kind of, I've always observed people. I've always really kind of observed people. But over the years, I've managed to also decide that it's a good idea to really observe myself. You know, observe what goes on in my own mind. And that's really what I'm saying here, is to just observe. Just be the observer. And if I notice that I have a feeling, then... you know, or if I get a little, you know, the little buzz out of something, if I happen to notice that, then I'm kind of really looking at it and wondering what just happened. You know, what happened here? Because I found that if I can really be aware of that and kind of know what happened, and you know, if that happens in my own mind. If I find that I have this sort of a strange occurrence that happened in my own mind, got a feeling out of something that, you know, sort of set a red flag off, then I find that if I'm really able to become aware of that, chances are it's not going to happen again. Chances are I'm going to be aware of it. Chances are good that I'm going to be able to learn something from that. So, anyway, there's Joel had a second comment. So thank you for the first comment, Joel. So here is Joel again with the second comment. This one's a little bit shorter.
And to the earlier part, yeah, I don't blame you. You know, if they end up enforcing those drive time cameras, yeah, I'd be out too. It's kind of funny too. I don't cover it up anymore. Although I used to, the only reason I don't cover it up anymore is as I got used to my new company, I'm kind of trusting him a little bit more. But the corporate laptop had a webcam on it, and I thought, should I possibly cover that up? You know, I thought about it, and I haven't done it on my new laptop. Most of the reason is now that I know my company a bit more, I know that they wouldn't be doing anything like that, because a good chunk of our workforce actually works from home like me, so you may not necessarily be in the since you're working from home, you don't necessarily have to dress up. You know, you can wear t-shirt and shorts all the time, you know, if you want. And that's kind of what I do. So, it's probably not worth them to capture that. You know, there's other ways. And plus, I really am mindful of what I do with every hour of my day when I work, because I work from my house. So, it would be an invasion of my privacy if they had that camera on all the time. So now there are occasions when I have to use it for a conference call. In those cases, I just make sure I'm presentable.
Okay. Well, thank you for the comments, Joel. Yeah. Now if I had a company device, and you know, in a sense I do, I've got this Qualcomm. So when I use this Qualcomm to, you know, I'm using it strictly, and it's kind of as a matter of necessity, but I pretty much use it strictly as a communication device with the people in the office. You know, you have the dispatchers, the load planners, and the fleet manager, and the different people. And I could, then there are drivers that use these things to kind of throw their little emotional temper tantrums and threaten this and threaten that, and they're going to quit and what have you. I am always very careful when I send a message. I'm always very careful to, you know, kind of make the message as clear as I can. Of course, I'm always, whenever I write something, whether it's an article or whatever else, I'm always kind of editing the words to kind of make the words say what I want them to. And so I do that also whenever I send a message to whoever I'm sending a message to on the other end. So I'm always very careful about never sending something that can be misunderstood, or I'm always careful to edit out anything that could be considered, well, I'm complaining, or that type of thing. I'm just careful about what I say over that Qualcomm. And sometimes the people on the other end, you would think, and I've been on the other end too, you would think that they would be careful about what they say, you know, what they're saying on that Qualcomm, the messages that they send. And once in a while, it doesn't happen very often, but once in a while, I've gotten, I'll get a message from somebody that they could have worded it much better, and and I could end up taking it all the wrong way. So I'm just very careful. I think it's a very good idea. If it's a company device, just be very careful what you do with it. And, if you got a company laptop, just use it strictly for, only put on there, the software that you need to do your job with and nothing else. And, don't use it as a personal device. Same way if a company gives you a smartphone to use for company business, Even if they tell you, you can go ahead and, well, you can use this for your personal business too. No, I wouldn't be comfortable with that. I would rather just, if somebody gave me a company cell phone, I would just have it strictly as a company cell phone and not put anything else on it and only use it for company business. And kind of keep the two things separate. And I think that's really the best policy to have. So, but I'm sure there are companies that have, and certainly we've heard stories, I don't know about necessarily commercial organizations. I'm sure there's been some that have put software on company laptops to you know, so that enable them to kind of discreetly look at the webcams, to turn the webcam on and take a look at what's going on in front of it. I'm sure that's happened somewhere. It's a big world out there. But on the other hand, you hear about this. You remember a few years ago, there was a school system, a big scandal. I don't even remember the details about it now. But there was a school system that was... They were actually watching the kids. They handed laptops out to the kids. And this has probably happened more than once now that I think about it. They handed the laptops out to the kids, and then they were able to watch the... and they were watching the webcams on the on those laptops. And remember the scandal about it. So it happens. It's less likely to happen in a business setting, although it's not impossible that to happen. I'm going to say it probably has happened, because again, it's a big world out there, and there's lots of companies, but lots of different situations. But it's probably more likely in the case of a school system handing out laptops to students, and then you get the probably some pervert on the other end that works for the school system wants to look in on the kids, you know, and maybe see a naked kid, you know, they you know, because the predators do end up, whether you like it or not, predators, sexual predators, do end up working for school systems. And they do put themselves into situations where they're, you know, even churches, where they have access to kids. And so it does happen. There are people that are predators that work in child services organizations for the government, which is so-called child protective services. So you know, if I work for a government agency, I would probably cover the webcam up if you had a government laptop. But on the other hand, if you're just in an office setting and you're just, and that's the only place the laptop is when you're in a professional situations. And if they want to look in on you, I guess they can. But in the case of the truck with the camera, if they're looking in on that, that's you're living in the truck. So I don't know. If it came to the point where they told me that I had to have the camera or else no job, maybe, I don't know exactly, I might go ahead and accept the camera for a while, but then again, I don't know. But there are drivers right now that in my company right at this minute that have those cameras present. And people do look in on them from time to time. Now, they claim, apparently, there was this guy that was talking today, and he said that their documentation says that they will only look in case there's a so-called critical event that the truck ends up reporting. Let's say that the driver puts the brakes on hard enough to cause a wheel to lock up. That will get reported as a critical event by the Qualcomm system, and if there's too many of those, then they'll look in and kind of see what's, if they have the camera there, and see what the driver's doing. Because they've got access to the front facing camera plus the camera that's aimed at the driver. And on the other hand, I can see their argument, because it's their truck. they're hiring you to do it, to drive the truck in as professional manner as possible. And if you're not, then and if you're putting their truck in a bad situation, then they should know about it. And in fact, the company should be taking steps to stop that from happening. So I can see that side of it too. But it is kind of an invasion of privacy to a certain extent, having that camera aimed at you all the time, and you know, never knowing when someone may be just arbitrarily looking at it, looking in on it. So, but I don't know. Like I say, if push came to shove and they told me I had to have it, at this point, I would probably accept it till I get my debt paid off. And then see what happens after that. But trucking is heavily regulated, and it seems like there are always somebody's planning on additional regulations constantly. And so I don't know if it I'm in a position now where, or getting close to being in a position, closer to being in a position where if I decide it's too much, I can just kind of walk away from it. So, not there yet, but getting closer. So, anyhow, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring this to a close. Thank you, Joel, for the comments. If you want more podcasts sooner, send me some messages. So, because it does really help if I have someone that I can kind of interact with. It really does help to spur conversation, because as I was saying in the podcast I recorded last night, I feel like I've said everything there's to say at least 20 times, and at some point, is it really worth continuing to say that over and over again? It really does kind of become tough to talk, go over the same points over and over and over and over again without someone else to interact with. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.